At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Hot Stove edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I am Terry Cushman, and I am joined tonight by Jason Kelly and Cody Paulson. Jason, how are you?
Doing pretty good. I'm waiting for the stove to get a little hotter, though, because it's still a little tepid and a little cool right now. But those days are still to come, I guess. It's early, so I'll be patient.
All right. How you been? It's been a few shows anyway.
Yeah. Things have been pretty good. You know, just chilling out, same old. So
Celtics and Bruins have been kind of, you know, doing pretty good.
Yeah. We're actually in for a pretty fun winter, it looks like, here in Boston. So we'll take it because the Patriots aren't going anywhere anytime soon. So good thing the Bruins and Celtics are keeping us entertained.
And Brady's undefeated since his divorce, so.
Yeah.
You want to get better at life? Divorce your wife.
Yeah, he's going to be playing pretty fired up the rest of the season, I'm guessing. So.
Especially like when there's like a new name attached to Giselle every week. Like, oh yeah? Oh yeah? And then the next opponent, he throws however many yards, you know, 300 yards that game.
But I guess there's a new name attached to him, too.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, there were a couple of rumors about that earlier. I forget her name, but it was some Swedish model or something. Oh. So, you know, we'll see.
Okay, so he, all right. He prefers Europeans, apparently, I'm guessing. But, all right, so? I'm going to get myself in trouble. Cody, how are you? You were on last show, but got some more baseball to discuss. How was your weekend?
Weekend was good. Didn't have a wedding this one, so I was able to stay at home, kind of relax a little bit, get recharged. It was real nice. It's always entertaining too to see how fast celebrities move on from, you know, the last fling to the next one.
I know, it's the circle of life. One last thing about Giselle. Who is that comedian she was like hanging out with? Like TMZ was all over it.
That wasn't real. It was like an internet joke that she was going to date Pete Davidson because he dates like everybody.
And Cushman fell for it. All right. I was going to say that would have concerned me a little bit, but anyway, all right, let's stick to where, you know, let's get back in our lane here. All right. So the big news of the day, Nathan Eovaldi has declined his $19.65 million qualifying offer. So he could have just simply accepted that, played for that amount this year. That is actually $2.5 million more than what he had been getting paid the last 4 years, which was $17 million. So he turned down a one-year decent raise to hit the open market. So go ahead, Jason. What were your thoughts? Like, did that surprise you that he declined it?
Yeah, it didn't surprise me too much because I think Eovaldi is looking for a multi-year deal. I don't think he wanted another 1 year of he has to go out there and prove himself kind of thing. So he turned down a slight raise, but I think he still believes that he can get guaranteed contract of at least 3 or 4 years from, if not the Red Sox, from someone else. And I think right now that's what he cares more about. He cares more about sort of the years and the security as opposed to just taking a $2.5 million raise to just be on another 1 year deal. Cause you know, in his mind, he might be thinking, hey, if I take the QO and I pitch, you know, not that great next year and maybe my velocity dips or something like that, you know, his market value right now, according to Spotrac, is 16.7. So it's just under what he was making with the Red Sox. So maybe he looked at it and said, yeah, I can take the QO, but if I don't pitch that well next year, or if I get hurt, or if, you know, I miss time, whatever, that market value is going to crash down. And now all of a sudden I'm looking at taking, I'll be another year older and I'll be looking at taking 1 or 2 year deals for 9-10 million. I'd rather just reject the QO, work something out with Boston or whatever, and get a multi-year deal and get that security behind it. So I wasn't terribly shocked only because of, you know, his age and the kind of stage he's at in his career. I think he's just looking for a little bit more security.
Cody.
I think when we look at Nathan Eovaldi, we have to back it up a little bit farther than just this year alone, right? You know, we obviously signed him to that 4-year deal after, you know, what was a spectacular 2018 season. I thought it was a little bit reactionary at the time. Obviously, you have his heroics in, I believe it was Game 4, you know, the sixth basically shutout innings in what was the longest World Series game. Hand up, I'll say it, at the time, I wasn't thrilled that we offered 4 years to a guy that, you know, rarely finished a season. Yeah, he had high velocity, but, you know, he had a pretty crazy injury history. And I think, you know, on the other side of this 4-year deal, it was one of the few that was a win-win for both players, right? You had a guy that was kind of bouncing around from team to team, couldn't really find a footing, but got some guaranteed money. And, you know, we committed a lot of money to him at the time. I wasn't thrilled, but he ended up being our ace, you know? So him rejecting the 1-year qualifying offer at 32, I think makes a ton of sense from his stance. This is probably the last chance that he's going to have to make a multi-year deal. You know, as Jason mentioned, right, if he keeps doing these 1-year prove it deals and he doesn't have a great season, that market's going to dry up really quickly and he's not going to be able to sign any guaranteed money. He's going to have to kind of do it on a Waka type deal, a 1-year, $7 million here, you know, try to scrap out some additional millions based off of performance. Just because he rejected the qualifying offer doesn't mean that he doesn't have the opportunity to come back to us at that number, you know, if the market isn't there for him. But, you know, as much as I would love to see him, you know, get locked up, be in the rotation for next year, I wasn't all too surprised.
I was a little surprised, and Eovaldi is 32 at the moment. He'll be 33 in February, so right as they're reporting. So next year, essentially, his age 33 season. And I admittedly had to just look that up myself. But I really thought Eovaldi would probably take the qualifying offer because, number one, he's expressed the whole time he wants to stay in Boston, and that's the one guaranteed way to do it. But I was really surprised to find out last week with the rest of us that the Red Sox were interested in him at multiple years. Now, I don't know about you guys, but that's horrifying. That was horrifying to me. Like, I've spent the last 4 years just hoping for the best with Nathan Eovaldi. And that's one of those contracts you just hope you kind of get out of relatively unscathed, or at least that's how I looked at it. And now we want to add multiple years more? And I don't know if that's 2 years or if that's 3 years. I don't know what that is. I mean, we've seen 33-year-old pitchers get 3 years or more. So the other scary thing, he had the velocity dip that never really went, that never resolved itself. I don't think we really know the extent of what kind of damaged goods he might be at this point. You go back to 2019, 12 starts. And that was because he had bone chips in his elbow. He appeared in more games than that, but as a reliever. 2020, injured ankle. He didn't even get through the shortest MLB season of all time without going on the injured list. And I think, if I remember right, the trade deadline that year was September 1st. And I was thinking to myself, this guy has no trade value. No serious trade value to where you're going to get a haul or even a nice prospect. You're not going to get, you know, that lower top 10 guy that the Nationals got from us for Schwarber. Not saying that that was a super great prospect. But anyway, so Eovaldi goes on the injured list in 2020. 2021, that was his unicorn season. 32 starts, most of his career. Pitched pretty well, even into the month of October. Was probably a big reason why we, you know, got to game six of the ALCS. Can't take that away. But then back to reality in 2022, this past season. Only 20 starts. On the injured list one time for lower back inflammation. Kind of concerning. You know, back injuries in pitching doesn't go well. Then he gets reactivated but goes back on again shortly after with right shoulder inflammation. This is a guy who can't stay healthy. And it's frustrating to me that we have a general manager or whatever his title is, chief baseball officer, Hein Bloom, that thinks it's a good idea to add a guy who's a huge liability to a rotation that already has two other huge liabilities to it. Like, have we not learned anything from the Sale signing? And Sale had a shoulder problem in the 2018 playoffs. He wasn't good. And then he made the infamous, I went to the hospital because my belly button ring inflamed. That was his shoulder. And I think the popular theory, I don't know if this was proven or not, so don't take it as fact necessarily, but he took too much ibuprofen, had to get it flushed out. I saw that floating around. I don't know if it's true or not, but Chris Sale took that deal that next season. Everyone thought $145 million. Wow, that's a huge discount. Well, Sale probably knew he had no choice but to take that deal because he just limped to the finish line the previous two seasons. 2017, first year with us, ran out of gas. 2018 had the shoulder thing. Nathan Eovaldi to me has nothing but red flags. So when I learned today that he declined that, that was a huge sigh of relief to me. And I know he can still be back. They can still work out a multi-year deal. But the fact that he declined it and didn't use that as leverage to then, go deeper into negotiations with the Red Sox on that multi-year deal, that's a little bit encouraging for a guy like me who's in the extreme anti-Eovaldi camp right now. That says to me his agent has probably talked to other teams and he probably has a decent market out there for at least 2 or 3 years. And here's a comp, and I don't know if this is what he would get paid, but Tyler Anderson today just pitched a very good season, a career best season with the Dodgers, turned down their qualifying offer, signs with the Angels for 3 years, $39 million. So that's 13 per. I don't know if that's the neighborhood of all he ends up in, what he's looking for, what have you. But he could be in that range. So any thoughts on whether you guys wanted to or didn't want him to accept any type of deal with the Red Sox?
I mean, if we can get Eovaldi for 3 for $39, sign me up for that 10 out of 10 times. I mean, I'm looking at the free agent list this offseason, and there isn't the type of upside that Eovaldi has at seemingly, you know, that kind of price point, right? Obviously, turning down $20 million is turning down $20 million, but if you can lock him in for a 13 AAV, I think both parties would sign that, or maybe not both parties would sign that happily. I would be thrilled to get that as the Red Sox.
Yeah, I think when it comes to the free agent market, it's really not that good when it comes to starting pitching. Carlos Rodon, I think, is going to be too expensive. He's going to be too rich for the Red Sox blood, so forget about that. I know a lot of people have brought up Chris Bassitt. Chris Bassett's going to be more expensive than Eovaldi, and he's older than him. I think he's 30. He is 33 or just turned 33. So, and he's not a power pitcher. He's a ground ball guy. So do you really want to give top dollar to, you know, an old sort of sinker ball throwing guy? I don't know about that. You know, other names that are intriguing are guys like Taiwan Walker, Sean Manaya, who are maybe a little bit younger, but they're kind of reclamation projects too. So, you know, you mentioned 3 for 39 for a guy like Eovaldi. I wouldn't hate that either, because the other aspect of this is I was kind of on your side of this, Terry, where like when he rejected the qualifying offer, I was like, you know what? Good. Let's wash our hands of the Eovaldi era. Let's move on. But then I sort of thought about what your rotation looks like right now heading into the spring. And it's not that overwhelming. I mean, Chris Sale, who the hell knows what you're going to get out of him? I mean, I know that, you know, he expects to be healthy for the start of next year, but he could show up to spring training, get stung by a bee and go on the 60-day IL. So who knows what's going to happen with him? You've got Nick Pivetta again, but I think you've seen the best of Nick Pivetta. I think at this point it's a downward trajectory for him. You've got Brian Bello. He's your best pitching prospect, so that's great. You know, hopefully he continues to improve. And after that, it's like, we don't know what's going to happen with Waka. You know, Rich Hill might be back, but does that give you any great hope? It doesn't for me. I wouldn't mind Eovaldi coming back, especially if he takes a little bit of a haircut on the salary and he's only making 13 for another 3 years. I think that'd be fine, because honestly, I look at that free agent list and I go, there's really not another guy out there that I would want more than Eovaldi. Get, you know, if the money is the same, obviously, like I said, Rodon, forget it, that they're not going to pay him. Some stupid team is going to give Rodon 5 years over $100 million and they're going to live to regret it. So let someone else make that deal. The other guys on there, I'm just not impressed. Noah Syndergaard, he's not the same guy. He looks like he's quickly becoming cooked. So honestly, I'm kind of coming around to the idea of Eovaldi on like a 3-year deal. I don't want any more than three. I'll make that clear. Like, I don't want him on another 4-year deal. It's got to be 3 or less. But yeah, 3 for like between 35 and 39, I'm okay with that.
Another way I look at it is you've got Sale, you've got Paxton, and you would have Eovaldi under this scenario. I think there's a very realistic chance 2 of those 3 don't make 15 starts. And if that happens, that's probably last place. That's a lot of Cutter Crawford and it's a lot of Josh Winkowski. So I'm just not comfortable with it. And I don't know if we need to make trades. I don't know what it is. And I'll agree. Yeah, the free agent market isn't looking good. You know, this season, I wouldn't mind Noah Syndergaard on a 1-year deal, because I think he would start 30 games. Whether the stuff is effective, I don't know. You know, maybe he's a bad choice. He did look okay in the playoffs, though. I'll say that. Maybe he got lucky. I don't know. I'm going to assume that there's no interest in Waka, because he would have got the qualifying offer if that was the case. We're interested in Andrew Heaney, apparently. I thought he got hurt. I meant to look him up before we came on, but I feel like he missed a number of games last year. I'm concerned. And the Red Sox, there has been talk that they're interested in Heaney. And I just feel like going into 2023, the mindset is almost no different than it was in 2021. Just a bunch of high risk guys and you're hoping for the best.
So according to Spotrac, and again, it's not the most perfect figure, but it's what we have to go off of. They put Syndergaard's market value at $15 million, and he's 29 years old. So you'd have to imagine he would not want a 1-year deal. He's going to want at least 3, maybe even 4. So would you be more comfortable with Syndergaard at, let's call it 3 years, $15.5 million, or Eovaldi at 3 years, 13? And that's barely a difference. It's just a couple million, but you know, which guy would you rather throw the money at?
Gun to my head, I feel like I'm picking my poison here because there's just so much unknown with Syndergaard, and I feel like there's less unknown with Evaldi, but I would probably take Syndergaard. I just, what is a 35-year-old Nathan Evaldi going to be in year three? And is that velocity ever coming back? I don't, there's just, it just sounds extremely high risk to me.
I feel like 35-year-old Nathan Evaldi in the last year of the deal could see himself adopting like a Rich Hill kind of role where he's in the bullpen sometimes, he's a swing man, he makes spot starts when a guy gets hurt. Like, maybe that's what their mentality is. You know, maybe they're talking with Nathan, they say, look, we know that you want the years, but, you know, just so you know, like, if, you know, if we build up our pitching program again and, you know, your stuff starts to dip, you could be in the bullpen in the third year of that deal. Maybe that's what they're thinking.
I've kind of thought Evaldi all along had been better suited for the bullpen after 2019 anyway. I just thought that was the best way to salvage his remaining deal. And I feel like, you know, we kind of came out of it, you know, okay, I guess. It wasn't the worst contract. It wasn't the Panda contract. It wasn't the Hanley contract. I know those guys are hitters, but I don't know. I just feel like if he's on the injured list by this May or June, we're like, there's just going to be a lot of remorse, is what I feel like. I'm trying to pull up the free agent list right now. Let's see. I just want to go through the pitchers again. So let's here. I got a list right in front of me here. I agree on Carlos Rodon. I wouldn't want him for any more than three. He's going to get more than that. I'm out on him. I'm out on Kershaw. I'm out on Jake DeGrom. Is he another guy you guys would entertain or not touch him with a 10-foot pole? He's getting 4 or 5 years, I think, even at 34.
I don't think so. I mean,
the stuff
so.
Is elite for sure, but the amount of money and the contract that he's gonna garner is not something that I'm willing to deal with, especially considering that his durability is starting to come into question.
He's less durable, I feel like, than Evaldi. Here's a guy, you know, it's a resounding yes from me. I'm resigned to the idea I'm in the minority, but Justin Verlander, do you give him 2 or 3 years at age 40 with a fully rebuilt elbow?
Not for the number that was reported. I forget who said it. I think the Athletic threw a probable number out there. They're like, he could get like 2 years, $70 million. No, thank you. No, he's going to get some stupid, ridiculous number. I know that he's kind of doing the Brady thing and he's like defying father time a little bit, but at some point that well's going to run dry. No thanks.
Round it up to the next $10 million and bring the pitching coach from Houston, and then I'll sign that deal. But outside of that, no chance.
All right. Like I said, I'm in the minority. While I was doing that, I was trying to get Heaney's game started up. I'm not even used to this site, but
Andrew Heaney might be the Major League Baseball equivalent of Kirk Cousins. The guy that when nobody's watching him, he's lights out. But as soon as the lights turn on, this guy can't pitch, man. You bring him into New York in a big market and he just crumbled. His only good start was against us in what happens to be one of our worst seasons of all time.
Yeah. Well, he did own us twice, I think, in 2021. 3.10 ERA this year with 14 games started, only 72 innings pitched. I don't know why he pitched so few innings, but that's going to be a no thank you from me. So we don't like anybody yet. Bassett's 34. I think we've already said no. I may not hate him. Here's an interesting name. Jameson Taillon.
No. I'm out on Taillon. I think he's below average.
And if we get him at the end of the winter meetings, right? If there's no market and we can sign him below, you know, what is perceived market value, sure, he's an innings eater. But I would not want to win a bidding war for that to be the prize.
31 years old, so a little bit younger than some of these other guys. I might entertain a 2-year deal on him if it were me. Let's keep going here. Taiwan Walker is another guy I'd probably be interested in at relatively cheap money, $10-12 million a year for 2 or 3 years. I know Andrew showed his metrics, which weren't great, but if the Red Sox can identify something, you know, I wouldn't hate that deal. Let's see. We've already talked about Syndergaard. Yeah, we're getting to the really crappy ones now. Michael Boyd, Drew Smyly. I'm just going to list some of these names off. If you guys like one of them, we can talk about them. Let's see. Chris Archer, Dylan Bundy. Aaron Sanchez's name is on there. He's only 30 years old. probably hasn't pitched in a few years. Mike Clevinger, 32 years old. I don't know what he's got left. And I think we can wrap it up. Those are the better names this year. So
yeah, it's a crap list. It really is. Once you get past DeGrom and Verlander, there's just a massive drop off from those two to the next tier on the list. And as a Red Sox fan, you shouldn't be really, turning away any pitching help because this team desperately needs it. But these guys, for the money that they're going to command, because you look at those market values, I mean, even guys like Jordan Lyles, his market value is $17 million. I would not give Jordan Lyles anything more than like a bucket of old baseballs to have him pitch for me. Like
that's Spotrack.
Yeah, that's Spotrack.
I don't think that they're accurate most of the time.
May not be.
Yeah. I remember when Nunez was a free agent, Eduardo Nunez, remember him? Big acquisition in 2017. He was projected to get like $11 million over, it was 11 per, so it was a 2-year, $22 million deal. He ended up getting a $4 million deal with a $4 million player option. So I wouldn't go by that. I just pulled up Drew Smyly real quick. I mean, not terrible numbers in 2022. 22 games started, 3.47 ERA. I don't know. There, Bloom, you know, probably has some familiarity with him because he came from Tampa, or he arrived. He was in the David Price trade, is what it was, from the Tigers, but I don't know. It's another name that I don't love, but I like it more than Evaldi.
I mean, this free agent class is just name value alone. It's not necessarily like the numbers or the performance. It's just, oh, that was a guy like Chris Archer, right? Like, it still rings a bell and you think that there could be value there. Maybe you could, you know, like you said, Terry, find something in the video or in the mechanics and tweak something. But at a performance-wise, I mean, this is a tough year to rebuild a system or rebuild a rotation.
It is. And it makes me matter that we didn't sign one of the pitchers from last year's free agency. I was screaming Toronto pitcher there off the mountaintops.
Gausman.
Yes. Kevin Gausman. And
well, he stuck it to us as well.
Yeah, he did. He had a really good year and, you know, he didn't threaten for a Cy Young, but was just that solid guy that you would have hoped to have. And did they sign one other pitcher? It must have been Berríos. Yeah, he had a terrible year. Yeah, all right. Well, I just looked up Zach Davies, wasn't impressed. I'm just going to kind of give that up. But I would be more open personally to a guy like Syndergaard on the right deal. I'd still love to have Waka back, but I that's probably out of the question. So
Sean Manea might not be a bad option if, you know, as Jason has mentioned, right at the right number, I would be pretty thrilled with that signing.
I just think he's another guy with, you know, a bad injury history. How many games did he start last year? I got it right here. He started 28 games. All right. Well, he had a 5 ERA though. Maybe that was the problem.
We just need guys to pitch those 28 games. We can't be too picky.
Yeah, he did regress a lot when he went to San Diego, but he stayed mostly healthy throughout last year. So
okay,
and he's a guy who's pitched in the American League before, so he knows what that's about.
It must be tough pitching anywhere besides Oakland if that's where you cut your teeth first. All that foul ground,
yeah,
massive outfield. Like, what a pitcher-friendly ballpark.
One of the more friendlier ones, and right across the bay, San Francisco is another one, or it's not home run friendly. Let's put it that way. All right. So I guess that officially makes me the only hardcore no on the podcast. Cause Charlie and Mark like him. We know Andrew in the chat was open to it. So I guess I'm just the only anti-Evaldi guy, but that's fine. We'll see what happens in the coming days to see if the Red Sox do lock him up on a multi-year deal. I'm just kind of hoping Bloom surprises us with something, a trade or something. But yeah. All right. Let's get into some other stuff. Anthony Rizzo signs with the New York Yankees 2 years. $34 million, so that's $17 million per. There's a $6 million buyout on a third year if the Yankees don't pick up the club option. So that's essentially a $40 million guarantee if that buyout is picked up. If the third year option is picked up, then it becomes a $51 million guarantee. So that's pretty decent money for Anthony Rizzo. Some kind of under the radar implications of that signing could be him and Judge became pretty close friends. Perhaps they were even before that, but they are close friends nowadays. And maybe the Yankees are trying to warm the waters up a little bit to try to retain their big slugger. But Jason, go ahead. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised to see him go back there. I didn't think that Rizzo was gonna jump ship. I think he likes playing in New York. I think that ballpark certainly suits him. I mean, he mashed 32 home runs last year, so we thought his big power days were behind him. But playing at Yankee Stadium as a left-handed hitter will certainly fix that problem. So I think it's a smart move for Rizzo. I think it's a smart move for the Yankees too, because they're trying to establish a better culture there than they have in years past. And Rizzo definitely helps with that. And to your point about trying to lure Judge with that kind of move, that will help. You know, bringing back a guy like Rizzo and saying, hey, we care about having leadership here. We care about having good veterans here. You know, we'll find a different place for Josh Donaldson. Don't worry. It's going to be more guys like Anthony Rizzo, and we're not going to bring Chapman back. We're going to send him out to, like, I think they're really trying to show Judge, like, this is not a toxic locker room, toxic clubhouse anymore. We're committed to winning, and we're going to bring winning players in here. I don't know if it'll work, because I don't know if Judge is going to care more about that or, you know, the $400 million deal he gets from whoever. You know, like, does he chase the money or does he go back because he believes in the whole culture change? We'll see. But I think signing Rizzo was a good first step if the Yankees want to at least have a shot of bringing Judge back.
Yeah, this one was an absolute bummer as a non-Yankees fan. I mean, it made too much sense. The guy mashed in Yankee Stadium, you know, power lefty, good first baseman, a place that they, you know, have underperformed consistently since Teixeira left. There's no way that they could have let Rizzo get out the door and then look Judge in the eyes and say, hey, we're committed to winning, right? Jason touched on it a lot. They need to do essentially a roster turn, a roster lineup flip over. They've got a lot of empty names, guys that you're just not afraid of, right? Donaldson comes up, you're like, okay, cool. Maybe he goes out of the park, but chances are he's going to strike out looking with the bat on the shoulder. Chapman's a liability, can't pitch against the Red Sox. There's a bunch of guys on the Yankees roster that you're just not afraid of. And Rizzo was one of those dudes where he comes up and you're like, oh man, something's about to happen and it's not going to be good for our team. You know, there were reports about him potentially going to Houston, and maybe it was me being an optimist. Maybe it was me being a pie in the sky kind of guy. I was really hoping that there was more traction to that, because I don't think we're one offseason away from contending with Houston. So anything that would have weakened the Yankees would have been music to my ears. But obviously that didn't happen. You know, he goes back with that contract with New York. It made too much sense for them to let him get out the door. They obviously need to look at themselves in the mirror and look at that culture in house, because they're not winners right now, and they haven't been for a decade and a half at this point. And getting guys like Rizzo to stay is going to be a big step forward to them, you know, being the Yankees that they claim to be, as unfortunate as it is for us.
I was kind of surprised. I totally misread the Rizzo situation, because he declined the qualifying offer. I guess I shouldn't have been too shocked at that, but it didn't seem like there were negotiations going on. And you find out a few weeks ago that Aaron Judge has unfollowed the Yankees on all of his social media platforms, and now Rizzo declines the qualifying offer. I'm just kind of feeling like everybody's bailing from New York. And Jason, you talk about them wanting to improve the culture, and you know, that's probably because the culture seemed to be pretty bad. And that's what happens when you trade for Josh Donaldson. I mean, you got to assume that's a small factor, but being a little facetious, but yeah, and you had some of the players calling out Aaron Boone for his pitching decisions in the postseason. And I just really thought Rizzo was like, get me out of here. And Houston, I mean, who doesn't want to play for Dusty Baker right now? Who doesn't want to play in that atmosphere? So I thought that sounded extremely legit. It sounded like they were being aggressive, and so be it. Let's talk about Rizzo real quick. I'm just going to make some observations, actually. So he's going to be what, 33 maybe? He is 33. Yeah, so, and just turned 33 a few months ago. So next year, essentially, you know, it's his age 33, age 34 season. This contract brings him through you know, age 35, 36, the option, you know, would be to age 36, 37. This is an old team. This is a team that's going to be old. And that's what happened to them in 2015, 2016, when they weren't super competitive. They didn't make the playoffs in 2016. I think they lost to the Astros the year before in the one game wild card, but you've got DJ LeMahieu for another 3 or 4 years. That's not looking good. Josh Donaldson, I think, is going to be in the final year of his deal this year. He's going to be, I think, age 37. Stanton, I think, will be 32 years old. Not the best record of health there. Nothing to suggest he's going to be a beacon of health going forward. Like, this Yankees team is starting to look old. And so I don't know if the contract's going to age well. Other than the fact that Rizzo hit a bunch of home runs at Yankee Stadium, he hit 19 home runs at Yankee Stadium, 13 more on the road. So that was 32 overall for the season. His other numbers are surprisingly somewhat mediocre. Let's see. On the road, he hit, what was my spot here? On the road, he hit 225, at home, 222. So no huge advantage there with Yankee Stadium as far as hitting. As far as left-handed pitching and right-handed pitching, he hit 220 against righties, which is weird because isn't he a lefty? Yes, he is a lefty. Of course he's a lefty. That's why he's playing at Yankee Stadium. And then he hit .233 against lefties. So his splits were somewhat reversed, but still, I mean, mediocre. He's hitting in the .220s and .230s no matter what type of split you're looking up. So in the first half last year, here's another good one, hit .224. In the second half, hit .222. This is a guy that I think he's on the downside of his career, and they just locked him up for 3 years to improve the culture. It just goes to hammer away at the point that I love to make every offseason, that Brian Cashman is a 1990s GM. That's his mindset. That's how he builds his roster. And it's crazy to me that he's coming back. If I'm a Yankees fan, I've got no hope. I've got no hope whatsoever. I'm in the John Farrell days where I knew the culture was going to be bad. I knew the pitching management was going to be bad. And there was no reason to suggest we were going to go deep in October. And this is after 2013. I would have the same sense of doom if I was a Yankees fan.
I mean, the Yankees, the easiest thing they could have done 2 years ago was fire Aaron Boone when everyone was calling for it. And instead they said, no, we're going to give him a contract extension. We really like him.
So,
if you're a Yankees fan, you got to go, geez, it doesn't matter how they finish. They're just going to keep bringing back the same guy. Cashman's going to have a job for life. Boone's going to keep getting extensions. And yeah, sure, you sign a guy like Rizzo, and yes, it will help the culture to some extent. But like you said, he's 33 going on 34. Eventually, there's going to be a drop off there. Now, maybe part of the reasoning behind his contract is $17 million. You know, maybe if there's a team desperate enough, it's sort of a tradable contract, especially with that third-year buyout option. So if they do have to do what they did back in 2016, where they just, you know, that was when they traded away like Brian McCann and all their other old guys that they were done with. If they have to do that again, that's, you know, that contract, other teams would be willing to take that on, I think. So maybe that's part of the calculus here. But, I mean, yeah, even with Rizzo back, they still have, like you said, an old roster with bad contracts. Aaron Hicks, that contract is still on the books. DJ LeMahieu, that contract's aging like milk. Josh Donaldson is still going to be there next year because he's got a vesting option. And the buyout, I think, is $8 million, which is not terrible, but it's a little expensive for a buyout. So they'll probably keep him. So another year of Josh Donaldson in a Yankees uniform. I don't see how that helps anybody. I know that they've got these two amazing prospects, Anthony Volpe and Jason Dominguez, that are on the way, but they're both position players. They, you know, their young pitching hasn't come up yet. So, and Gerrit Cole, you know, he's sort of lived up to the contract. He pitched very well in the postseason, but it still isn't enough. So, and if they lose out on Judge, then, you know, screw your culture change. You just lost the guy who basically carried you all last season. So how's that going to go? I agree. If I'm a Yankees fan, I'm very concerned about the future of this team, because unless they pull another miracle like they did in 2016, where they make a bunch of trades and they get a bunch of prospects back that, you know, can start pretty quickly, I don't see how they turn around all that fast.
Cody, any more thoughts?
No, I mean, As a Red Sox fan, looking at this offseason, you know, we kind of touched on the free agent market as it was, you know, much like we're kind of in between a rock and a hard place. It was the same thing for the Yankees, right? They've got a lot of old guys on bloated contracts with not a lot of players they can bring in to kind of sub them out. And the Yankees have proven time and time again, they'd rather go out and get a proven commodity versus trusting their own farm system. You know, they've got a logjam of great position players, allegedly, according to, you know, the farm system's top 100, that barely make it into playing time. And, you know, looking at that and the way that Cashman likes to operate, it's kind of a good place to be as a Red Sox fan, right? Either they sign Judge to this tremendous contract that's going to be, you know, a backbreaker on the back half of it, or they let him walk. And then, you know, either way, it's a win-win for us.
I'm just going through the Yankees roster in 2016. Here are some of the names. Alex Rodriguez, who was limping to the end. I think they famously told him they were cutting him, but gave him a full week to still play. Jacoby Ellsbury was in the late stages of his career at that point. They had Carlos Beltran, who was having basically his swan song. Mark Teixeira, oh, I thought he was on there. Maybe he left in 2015. Not seeing him. No, he was. Yes, no, Mark Teixeira was there in 2016. So,
quick side note about Tex. There was a highlight that came across Twitter where Tex scored on a sack fly by Judge, and that blew my mind. I did not know that they were ever on the same team sharing a lineup card. That was just wild to see.
Yeah, and their one bright spot in 2016 was Gary Sanchez, but that was probably the best season he ever had, and it was only half a season. So that was just an old, busted roster. Curious to see their pitching. I just hate the way this... Yeah, Nathan Eovaldi, that was his Tommy John year with them. Miguel Pineda, who could never stay healthy. CC Sabathia, although was somewhat relevant. So I guess their pitching wasn't that old. I think Tanaka was having some decent seasons at that point. But Cashman is, you know, he's got a dinosaur mindset, and he's filling his roster up with almost actual dinosaurs. They're that old. So it's going to be even more depressing going forward. Like, they need to win next year or the year after with these contracts. They've got about a two-year window. So it looks bad. All right, so let's wrap up. We won't get into it too much because we've been talking about him ad nauseum, but Xander Bogaerts keeps getting connected to other teams. It was looking... I thought there was some serious momentum with the Phillies over the weekend, and that's significant because obviously Dave Dombrowski, has a history. He gave him his first extension, which was 6 years, $120 million. That's the one he opted out of. So perhaps he's looking to kind of add to it. And the Phillies, let's face it, they're an easy team to sell a free agent on. They're like, oh, you get to play with JT Realmuto, Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, which would be, you know, he'd be reuniting with. It's an easy team to try to attract, a top flight free agent. And so the Phillies was one. And apparently the Yankees are connected to him. And what's significant about that, and I know Boris is going to connect him to everyone. That's how he does it. But what's significant about that is apparently Hal Steinbrenner has been in contact with Judge. And I think at least one or two of those meetings have been in person since the season ended. And he's telling Judge that he's not the only priority. They want to build a team around him and bring in players. So perhaps a guy like Bogaerts would be someone they would target. So here's my question to you guys. Who would be more motivated to screw the Red Sox, Dave Dombrowski or Brian Cashman? Jason, go ahead.
I still think at the end of the day, it's Cashman. Because the Red Sox are your direct competition if you're Brian Cashman. Dave Dombrowski, I think, obviously wants to stick it to Boston, but he kind of already did just by being two wins away from, you know, from a World Series and, you know, with Kyle Schwarber leading the way in many regards. So I think Dombrowski kind of, and, you know, during that whole time was when he came out with that interview where he said, yeah, I felt like I got screwed by Boston, you know, the way it ended didn't sit well with me. So he got to take a shot at the organization and he got to go to a World Series and he got to kind of put his ass in Red Sox Nation's face by doing that. So I think he's good. I think he's sort of sated that he feels good now. I'm sure he still wants Bogaerts because he recognizes the talent. He recognizes that he already has a good team in front of him. Adding a guy like Xander Bogaerts could put them over the hump and get them right back to the World Series. But I still think Cashman's more motivated. I think Cashman would love to swipe Xander Bogaerts away from the Red Sox, have him play at shortstop at Yankee Stadium, you know, bring back Judge as well. And then, you know, because right now, Red Sox fans, even though we finished worse than the Yankees did last year, we're kind of laughing at them because we're going, geez, you guys just, you can't get past Houston. You keep on choking. You know, you have all these bad contracts. So I think Cashman kind of looks at that and goes, oh, yeah, really? Yeah, you want to laugh at all my bad contracts? I'm going to give a 7-year deal to your shortstop, and we're going to steal them away from you. And you guys are going to keep finishing in last place because we're going to have the better team. So I think Cashman's definitely motivated to do that.
Cody.
It'd be one thing if, you know, we signed Dombrowski as, you know, this young farmhand, brought him up through the front office system. You know, he cut his teeth with the Red Sox. We groomed him. He got the GM role. And then, you know, we turned him out the door the way that we did. But this isn't his first time that he's been kind of shown the door. So, you know, much like Jason said, I think Cashman is definitely got to be the one that's a little bit more burning to burn us, for lack of better terms. You know, he's been in the division since the 90s, right? So, you know, every year that we win a division, every year that we knock him out of the playoffs, every year that, you know, we hoist a trophy and that they don't, you know, it's something that he's got to hear in the entire offseason. Dombrowski is tangentially related to the Red Sox atmosphere, organization, whatever you want to call it, but Cashman has to look at us 19 times a year, if not every day in the standings. There's no doubt in my mind that Cashman wants to put it over on us more than Dombrowski does. And, you know, much like Jason said, you know, if they want to sign Bogaerts to, you know, a 7-year, 200, whatever million dollar deal, let them make the same mistake that they did with Jacoby Ellsbury. You know, as great as Xander was, love the guy to death. He's been a tremendous value add to the franchise. I don't think these long-term deals with guys that are on the wrong side of 30 are going to age well. So if you want to sign a guy to, you know, a 28, 29, 30 million AAV, by all means. Bogaerts has been linked to the Phillies. He's been linked to the Cubs. He's been linked to the Yankees. Pundits think he's coming back to the Red Sox. He's all over the place. It's going to be one of those deals where out of the blue, we're going to see ink to paper Bogaerts signs somewhere. And it's going to be what it is, right? You know, as long as the Red Sox looked him in his face, gave him what, you know, is a fair shake, I think that's all we can ask for at this point. He's going to go, I think, where the most money is, because he's looking at this as his last big deal.
I don't know which one's more motivated, to be honest. I still kind of think Dombrowski is a little bit bitter. One of my favorite parts about that interview was, and it's not my favorite, like as if I'm making fun of him, I guess I should say one of the more interesting parts of it was the night Dombrowski got fired. It was an ESPN Sunday night game, and he had just been on the field to do the pregame ceremonies. For some reason, he had to be down there. And then he goes upstairs, meets with John Henry, and he's fired. And then he said, when he got home, the game was like in the fifth or sixth inning. And it was just jarring that he was watching it at home. He wasn't there. So I just feel like those moments have kind of stuck with him a little bit. And perhaps there is a little bit of motivation. Selfishly, me being one of the bigger anti-Bloom guys on this crew, seeing the meltdown of Xander going to New York is just, I am here for that. I want a front row seat, and I will overpay for that. I will camp out in a sleeping bag to get a ticket to that show on social media. Cause I don't think there's a lot of value long-term with Xander, much like Cody was just saying. I don't think he's going to, he's not a guy in his 30s that's going to age well. Let's put it that way. There's been exceptions, and but I don't think he's going to be one of them. I will say I don't think he's going to fall off as quickly as Ellsbury did. Like, that was a dramatic, sudden drop. So I think he'll be relevant for a little bit longer, but I would just love to see that meltdown. I wouldn't hate if he signed with the Phillies just because I like that team, and I think he'd potentially be a good fit there. They, I think, declined the option of Gene Segura, so they don't have a shortstop right now. So that makes sense. And the interesting thing with Dombrowski, if you remember, through his Red Sox tenure, he likes to make deals in the middle of the night. A lot of stuff goes down in the middle of the night, and his firing, the news of that got broken in the middle of the night, ironically. But I remember he traded for Brad Ziegler, which was a trade I loved. It didn't work out quite as great. Ziegler had a 150 career whip, and Farrell always thought it was a good idea to bring him in with runners on. So no wonder it didn't work out, but there was another significant deal that happened in the middle of the night. I know Steve Pierce was late because we were recording as that news happened. But check your phones right when you wake up. See if there's any Phillies news, whether it's Xander related or not. I wonder if Dombrowski makes deals when he's like six in the bag. You know, he's had some drinks and perhaps that's helped facilitate some of these deals. Just speculating. I do miss Dombrowski's aggressiveness, and I miss how transparent he was with the media. There was no maneuvering. There was like, yep, we need this, and we're trying to get it done. And that was that. And if he
was active, I'll give you that. It is much nicer to be on the active end of deals versus the interest kings that we seem to be. We are interested in, or we are looking at, or we have had conversations with.
Right.
Dombrowski actually, you know, closed or signed deals ink to paper.
I'm still jealous of the Phillies, though, over the fact that Girardi got fired in the middle of the season. I was begging for that for so many years with Farrell. Dombrowski kept him probably 1 year too late, but I thought I had one other thing about Dombrowski. Oh, it was just kind of coming to me as you guys were giving your takes. When you're looking back at Dombrowski's tenure, it wasn't the position player contracts that hurt him or the acquisitions. It was always the pitching. You know, the Sale extension, not good. The David Price signing, not great. Not a complete flop either. But, you know, Eovaldi, I guess it kind of worked out. But you look at the hitting, JD Martinez, one of the better free agent contracts of all time. Steve Pierce, brilliant. Nobody knew it would be at the time. I mean, he was a Yankees killer. We knew that coming into it, but ended up being the World Series MVP. And another thing I liked was Hanley Ramirez was a lost cause, and Dave Dombrowski said, watch this. He's our first baseman. And it worked okay for a while. And then when the time came to cut him, what happened? Dombrowski did what he had to do. So he was great as far as the position players went, not so good with pitching. And as well as the bullpen as well. Remember Carson Smith? Remember that? Everyone raved. And it just did not work well. Tyler Thornburg again. So.
I was going to say Thornburg. Yeah, that was... Oof. Yikes.
I passed a Thornburg street, and I've passed it a couple of times, and I keep forgetting to snap a picture somewhere down here in South Carolina. And another thing, too, there's a Cracker Barrel billboard, and it said something about beer and chicken on it. And it's just, how do you not get triggered by that, you know? I kept forgetting to take a picture of it. They finally got rid of it, but they've got a new ad up now. So, yeah. So, anyway, continue to watch the Bogarts, you know. I was just wondering, though, before we do go, I'm like, he's probably third, ranked number three out of the four. I'm guessing, you know, you'd have either Correa or Turner above him in some order. I wouldn't argue either way. Then you got Bogarts, then you got Swanson. And I was wondering if Swanson was a big drop off from Bogarts, but it's not really looking that way. 25 home runs, 96 ribbies, batted 277. Certainly had a better year than Bogaerts did offensively. Hit 27 bombs the year before, so his power has shown up. So perhaps he could still be somewhat desirable. How old is he? He must be late 20s.
I think he's 28, yeah, I want to say.
Yeah, he'll turn 29 in February. So
he actually had the most home runs out of that group.
Did he? Okay.
Both Correa and Turner hit less than 25 as well. I think Correa had 21.
Charlie always gives this take on how Correa never has hit 30. He's never hit 100 runs batted in, never driven them in, I should say. I'm pulling up Turner right now. Turner 298 on the year with only 21 home runs, exactly 100 ribbies. 27 stolen bases, though. I mean, he's a five-tool guy.
The smoothest slider in the game, some would say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he definitely had some highlight reels where he just kind of floated across the plate and then just pops up, you know, almost like he's doing ballet or something. Yeah, he just turned 29 in June, so he kind of, he's halfway through the season. But yeah, I guess he would probably be number one on everyone's list. But one of those guys has to sign, I feel like, by the end of the month. I feel like one of them goes this month. I could be wrong, but I feel like someone's going to make up their mind and just pounce on one of them. And we'll see. Final thoughts before we go.
Ramiel Tapia just got designated for assignment from Toronto.
Oh.
The dude that ruined our entire summer. Felt like every time he came up, he just did damage to us. You know, he's a career 980 fielding percentage, 260 batter, plays all three positions in the outfield. If there's no takers, wouldn't mind seeing him out there.
I'm just pulling up his numbers. I guess I was unfamiliar with his time in Colorado, so he's actually been in the league a little while.
I think he's 29.
Yeah, I'd probably pass. I mean, 265, not bad. 292 on base, doesn't really walk a lot. There's no real power to speak of. 7 home runs, that's his second most in his career. He hit 9 in 2019, so never really cracked double digits there. Let's look at his stolen bases. Stole 20 in 2021, but only 8 last year. I guess, I mean, as a fourth outfielder, but I think essentially we have Ref Snyder in that role right now. Mm-hmm. is the thing.
I mean, it's purely reactionary, and you know, I watched him ruin our days. Wouldn't mind seeing him do it for us, kind of thing. Maybe, you know, he loves Fenway Park or whatnot. But yeah, I absolutely agree. If you just look at his raw numbers, he's not a guy that you're going to be burning down the hatches to get, for sure.
Yeah, apparently, like you said, it was mostly with us. Another guy who just completely owned us and by the grace of God got traded to the Brewers was Rowdy Tellez, would just mangle us every time. Yeah, he's still playing on the big league roster for them. Hit. Let's see. Wow, 35 home runs. I don't remember that. 35 home runs in 2022. Rowdy Tellez only hit 219 with a 306 on base. So Anthony Rizzo-esque for Tellez. I wonder if he must have DH'd a lot of it because he's only got a 0.9 war. But anyway, just a dude that just raked against us, but apparently he's smashing everyone lately. 30th round is when Tellez got drafted. But all right, we will wrap on that. We'll be back, I think, on Friday. I don't know if we'll record that night, though, but that's the non-tender deadline day. That's where you might see some interesting names get non-tendered, and I know we went through a very underwhelming free agent list as far as pitchers. Maybe someone we can identify as serviceable will get non-tendered, and we could add to our roster that way. I can't imagine any non-tender candidates really on the Red Sox. Maybe Christian Arroyo if they're going to get super creative, but at $2.2 million, I don't see him going anywhere. I don't think, yeah, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head. Maybe one of our catchers, actually. I don't know what their plans are for, who did we get from the, I'm drawing so many blanks tonight, from the White Sox?
Reese McGuire.
Wow, that wasn't even close to the top of my brain. So he's another one that could be non-tendered. But either way, we'll be back probably no later than Sunday to cover that. So, and if anything significant happens, though, we will be, as far as the Red Sox go, we'll be here to cover it. So everyone have a good rest of your week. Take care.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more with volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.